As he hurried out into the lobby, Shaza saw Blaine Malcolm-Est near the front door, talking agitatedly to the janitor. As soon as he saw Shaza, he said, "Thank God," and came towards him across the checkered marble floor. Shaza turned away from him and looked up the staircase. From the top, Tara stared down at him, white-faced and terrified, held by some unnatural passion. "Tara!" Shaza called and started towards the foot of the staircase, but she whirled and disappeared around the angle of the corridor. Shaza flew at the stairs, taking them three at a time. "What's happening, Shaza?" Blaine called after him, but Shaza did not answer. He came out of the staircase, still at a run, and as he rounded the corner, Tara was halfway down the corridor ahead of him. He did not waste time by shouting at her, and instead flung himself forward and sprinted after her. As she ran, Tara glanced over her shoulder and saw him swiftly overtaking her. "Moses!" she screamed. "Look out, Moses!" It was futile. The panelled walls of Shaza's office were too thick and soundproof for her warning to reach him, and her cry confirmed all Shaza's worst suspicions. Instead of running straight on towards the front door of his suite, as Shaza expected, Tara jinked suddenly into the side passage, ducking under Shaza's outstretched arm, and he tried to turn with her, but he was off balance and she disappeared into his blind spot. Shaza ran into the corner of the wall, crashing into it head first, taking it on the brow above his blind eye. The silk patch cushioned the impact slightly, but still the skin split and blood poured down his cheek. Although he was stunned, Shaza managed to keep his feet. He staggered in a full circle, still dazed. Blaine was following him, his face flushed with effort and concern as he ran down the corridor. "What the hell is going on, Shaza?" he roared. Shaza turned from him and saw Tara at the door to the back entrance of his office. She had a key, but she was in such a state that her hands were shaking too wildly to insert it in the lock. Shaza gathered himself, shaking the darkness out of his head, and the droplets of his blood splattered the wall beside him. Then he launched himself after Tara. She saw him coming and dropped the key. It tinkled at her feet, and she clenched her fists and beat with them on the closed door. "Moses!" she screamed. "Moses!" As Shaza reached her, the door was jerked open from the inside, and Moses Gama stood in the threshold. The two men confronted each other over Tara's head until Tara ran forward. "Moses, I tried to warn you," she screamed, and threw both arms around him. In that instant, Shaza looked beyond the pair and saw that the altar chest stood open, its contents piled on the carpet. The coil of wire that he had found behind the encyclopedias had been laid across the floor to his desk and connected to some kind of compact electrical apparatus. Shaza had never seen one before, but he knew instinctively that it was a detonation device and that it was ready to fire. On the desktop beside it lay an automatic pistol. As a firearms enthusiast and collector, he recognized it as a Tokarev 7.62mm, the standard Russian military issue. On the floor behind his desk, Trisha lay on her side. She was gagged and bound at wrists and ankles, but she was wriggling desperately and giving little muffled cries. Shaza lunged forward to tackle Moses Gama, but the black man gathered Tara in his arms and hurled her into Shaza's chest. The two of them reeled backwards against the jamb of the door. Moses spun around and leapt to the desk. As Shaza tried to get free of Tara, she was clinging to him and moaning, "No! No, he must do it!" Shaza broke her grip and flung her aside, but across the room Moses was standing over the electrical transmitter. He pressed a switch, and a bulb on the panel of the casing glared redly. Shaza knew that he could not reach Moses across the floor before he fired the device, but his mind was racing ahead of his limbs and body. He saw the wire strung out across the carpet, almost at his feet, and he stooped and took a twist of it around his right hand and heaved back against it with all his strength. The end of the wire was firmly attached to the transmitter, and as Shaza hauled on it, the device was jerked out of Moses' hands and flew off the desktop to clatter across the floor midway between the two of them. They both leapt for it at the same instant, but Moses was by a fraction of a second the quickest, and his hands scrabbled on the transmitter. Shaza was in full stride, and he did not check. He leaned forward and transferred all the weight and power of his body into his hips, swinging his right leg into the kick he aimed at Moses' head. The kick caught Moses in the side of the temple, and snapped his head over. The transmitter tumbled from his grip, and he was flung over backwards, rolling until he crashed into the desk. Shaza followed him and aimed another flying kick at his head, but Moses caught his foot on his raised forearm and seized his ankle. He twisted violently, lifting the ankle, and Shaza was caught on one foot with his weight backwards, and he fell heavily. Moses pulled himself up the side of the desk and reached out for the Tokarev pistol, and Shaza scrambled after him on hands and knees. As Moses swung the pistol around, Shaza lunged at him again and grabbed his wrist with both hands. They wrestled over the floor, rolling and kicking and grunting, fighting for the Tokarev. Tara had recovered, and now she ran into the room and picked up the fallen transmitter. She stood helplessly with it in her hands. "Moses, what must I do?" she cried. Moses grunted with a supreme effort as he rolled on top of Shaza. "The yellow button! Push the yellow button!" At that instant, Blaine Malcolm-S ran in through the open door. "Stop her, Blaine!" Shaza yelled. "They're going to blow—" Moses' elbow hit him in the mouth and cut off the words. While the two of them still struggled on the floor, Blaine held out both hands to his daughter. "Here, give that to me, Tara." "Don't touch me, Daddy." She backed away from him, but she was trying to locate the yellow button, groping for it while she stared at her father. "Don't try and stop me, Daddy." "Blaine!" Shaza gasped, but broke off as Moses attempted once more to wrench his pistol arm out of Shaza's grip. The corded black muscles in Moses' arm bulged and writhed with the effort, and Shaza made a choking sound in his throat as he tried to hold him. The muzzle blast of the pistol lit the room like a flash bulb, and there was the immediate sharp stink of burnt powder. Blaine Malcolm-S, his arms outstretched towards Tara, spun around as the bullet hit him, and he went reeling into the bookcase. He stood there for a moment, with the blood starting to spread in a dark tide down the front of his white shirt, and then he sagged slowly onto his knees. "Daddy!" Tara dropped the transmitter and ran to him. She fell on her knees beside him. Shock had weakened Shaza's grip for an instant, and Moses twisted free and jumped to his feet. But as he lunged for the transmitter, Shaza was after him. He caught Moses from behind as he stooped over the transmitter and with one arm around his throat pulled him away from it. In his efforts to break the throttling grip, Moses dropped the pistol and clawed at Shaza's arm with both hands. They grappled wildly, twisting and grunting, and the transmitter lay at their feet. Shaza shifted his weight, lifted one foot, and drove his heel into the panel of the transmitter. The panel crackled as it was stove in, but the red bulb still burned. Moses was galvanized to fresh effort by the damage to the transmitter, and he almost tore himself free of Shaza's grip, twisting to face him. But Shaza put out all his strength, and they stood chest to chest, gasping and heaving, spittle and sweat and droplets of blood from Shaza's head wound smearing both their faces. Again, Shaza had him off balance for a moment, and he aimed another kick at the transmitter. He landed solidly, and it went skidding across the floor and crashed into the wall beyond the desk. The plastic case split open at the impact, the wire tore loose from the terminal, and the red bulb flickered and then extinguished. Moses gave a wild, despairing cry and sent Shaza flying backwards over the desk. As he lay sprawled across the desktop, Moses scooped up the pistol from the carpet and staggered to the open doorway. There he turned and raised the Tokarev and aimed at Shaza. "You!" he gasped. "You!" But his hands were shaking, and the pistol wavered. He fired, and the bullet thudded into the desktop beside Shaza's head, tearing up a blur of splinters. Before Moses could fire again, Manfred Delarey bulked in the doorway behind him. He had seen Shaza's agitation and followed him from the chamber. He took in the situation at first glance, and he reacted instantly. He swung the big, hard fist that had won him an Olympic gold medal, and it crashed into the side of Moses Garmer's neck, below the ear. The pistol fell from Moses' hand, and he toppled forward, unconscious, on top of it. Shaza dragged himself off the desk and tottered across to Blaine. "Here," he whispered, as he dropped to his knees beside him. "Let me have a look." Tara was blubbering incoherently.
"Daddy, I'm sorry. I didn't mean this to happen. I only did what I thought was right."
Shaza tried to pull her away, but she clung to Blaine, blood on her hands and down the front of her dress. "Let him alone," Shaza said, but she was hysterical now and tugged at her father so that his head jerked from side to side loosely.
"Daddy, speak to me, Daddy!"
Shaza leaned back and slapped her hard, knocking her head across.
"Leave him, you murderous bitch,"
he hissed at her, and she crawled away from him, her face beginning to redden and swell from the blow. Shaza ignored her and gently opened the jacket of Blaine's dark suit. Shaza was a hunter, and he recognized the bright, clear colour of arterial blood seething with tiny bubbles from the torn lungs.
"No," he whispered. "Please, no."
Only then he realized that Blaine was watching his face, reading in it his own death.
"Your mother," he said,
and the wind of his lungs puffed through the bullet hole in his chest.
"Tell Santon..."
He could not go on. "Don't talk," Shaza said. "We'll get a doctor." He shouted over his shoulder at Manfred, who was already on the telephone.
"Hurry, man, hurry."
But Blaine gripped his sleeve, tugging it urgently.
"Love," he choked on his own blood. "Tell her... Love, tell her I love her."
He got it out at last, and panted as the blood gurgled in his chest. And then he gathered himself for his last great effort.
"Shaza," he said. "Shaza, my son. My only son."
The noble silver head fell forward, and Shaza held it to his chest, hugging him as he had never been able to do before. Then, still holding him, Shaza wept for the man who had been his friend and his father. The tears squeezed out of his empty eye socket and trickled from under the silk eye patch down his face to mingle with his own blood and drip from his chin. When Tara crawled forward on her knees and reached out to touch her father's corpse, Shaza lifted his head and looked at her.
"Don't touch him," he said softly. "Don't you dare soil him with your touch."
There was such a look in his single eye, such contempt and hatred in his face, that she recoiled from him and covered her face with both hands. Still on her knees, she began to sob hysterically. The sound of it rallied Shaza. Gently he laid Blaine on his back and closed his eyes with his fingertips. In the doorway, Moses groaned and shuddered, and Manfred slammed the telephone back on its cradle and crossed to him. He stood over him with those huge fists clenched and asked,
"Who is he?"
"Moses Garmer." Shaza stood up, and Manfred grunted.
"So, we've been looking for him for years. What was he doing?"
"I'm not sure." Shaza went to where Tricia lay and stooped over her. "But I think he has laid explosives somewhere in the house. That is the transmitter. We'd better clear the place and have the army bomb disposal..." He didn't have to finish, for at that moment there was the sound of running men in the corridor, and three of the security guards burst into the suite. Manfred took over immediately, snapping orders at them.
"Get the handcuffs on that black bastard," he pointed at Moses. "And then I want the building cleared."
Shaza freed Tricia, leaving the gag until last. But the instant her mouth was clear, Tricia pointed at Tara, where she still knelt sobbing beside Blaine's corpse.
"She..."
Shaza did not let her finish. He seized her wrist and jerked Tricia to her feet.
"Quiet!"
he snarled at her, and his fury silenced the girl for a moment. He dragged her through into the outer office and closed the door. "Listen to me, Tricia," he faced her, still holding both her wrists.
But she was with him."
Tricia was trembling.
"It was her."
"Listen to me." Shaza shook her into silence. I know all about it. But I want you to do something for me. Something for which I will always be grateful. Will you do it?" Tricia sobered and stared at him. She saw the blood and the tears on his face and thought her heart might break for him. Shaza took the handkerchief from his top pocket and wiped his face.
"For me, Tricia, please," he repeated,
and she gulped noisily and nodded.
"If I can," she agreed.
Don't say anything about my wife's part in this until the police take a formal statement from you. That won't be until much later. Then you can tell them everything. Why? She asked. For me and for my children. Please, Tricia. Again she nodded, and he kissed her forehead. You're a good, brave girl, he said, and left her. He went back into the inner office. The security police were grouped around Moses Gama. He was manacled, but he lifted his head and stared at Shaza for a moment. It was a smouldering gaze, dark and filled with outrage. Then they led him away. The office was crowded and noisy. White-uniformed ambulance attendants were bringing a stretcher through the doorway. A doctor, a member of parliament, summoned from the chamber, was working over Blaine as he lay on his back. But now he stood up, shook his head and gestured at the stretcher-bearers to take Blaine's body. The uniformed guards, supervised by Manfred de la Rey, were already gathering up the pieces of the smashed transmitter and beginning to trace the wire to its source. Tara was sitting in the chair behind his desk, weeping silently into her hands. Shaza went past her to the wall safe hidden behind one of the paintings. He tumbled the combination and swung open the steel door, screening it with his body. Shaza always kept £2,000 or £3,000 in banknotes against an emergency. He stuffed the wads into his pockets, and then quickly he sorted through the stack of family passports until he found Tara's. He relocked the safe, went to where she sat and pulled her to her feet. "Shaza, I didn't..." "Keep quiet," he hissed at her, and Manfred de la Rey glanced at him across the office. "She's had a terrible shock," Shaza said. "I'm taking her home." "Well, come back here as soon as you can," Manfred nodded. "We'll need a statement." Still gripping her arm, Shaza marched her out of the office and down the corridor. The fire alarm bells were ringing throughout the building, and members and visitors and staff were streaming out through the front doors. Shaza joined them, and as soon as they were out in the sunlight, he led Tara to the Jaguar. "Where are we going?" Tara asked as they drove away. She sat very small and subdued in her corner of the bucket seat. "If you talk to me again, I may lose control," he warned her tightly. "I may not be able to stop myself strangling you." She did not speak again until they reached Youngsfield Airport, and Shaza pushed her up into the cockpit of the silver and blue Mosquito. "Where are we going?" she repeated. But he ignored her as he went through the start-up procedures and taxied out to the end of the runway. He did not speak until they had climbed to cruise altitude and were flying straight and level. "The evening flight for London leaves Johannesburg at 7 o'clock. As soon as we are in radio contact, I will reserve your seat," he told her. "We will get there with an hour or so to spare." "I don't understand," she whispered into her oxygen mask. "Are you helping me to escape? I don't understand why." "For my mother, firstly. I don't want her to know that you murdered her husband. It would destroy her." "Shaza, I didn't..." She was weeping again, but he felt no twinge of compassion. "Shut up," he said. "I don't want to listen to your blabbering. You will never know the depths of my feelings for you. Hatred and contempt are gentle words that do not describe them." He drew a breath, then went on. "After my mother, I am doing it for my children. I don't want them to live their lives with the knowledge of what their mother truly was. That is too much for a young man or woman to be burdened with." Then they were both silent, and Shaza allowed the terrible grief of Blaine's death, which up until then he had suppressed, to rise up and engulf him. In the seat beside him, Tara was mourning her father also. Spasms of weeping shook her shoulders. Her face above the mask was chalky, and her eyes were like wounds. As strong as his grief was Shaza's hatred. After an hour's flying, he spoke again. "If you ever return to this country again, I'll see you hanged. That is my solemn promise. I'll be divorcing you for desertion as soon as possible. There'll be no question of alimony or maintenance or child custody. You will have no rights nor privileges of any kind. As far as we are concerned, it'll be as though you have never existed. I expect you'll be able to claim political asylum somewhere, even if it's Mother Russia.
Again he was silent, gathering himself, regaining full control.
You will not even be at your father's funeral, but every minute of every day his memory will stalk you. That is the only punishment I am able to inflict upon you. God grant it is enough. If he is just, your guilt will slowly drive you mad. I pray for that.
She did not reply, but turned her face away. Later, when they were on approach to Johannesburg, descending through 10,000 feet, with the skyscrapers and the white mine dumps glowing in the late sunlight ahead of them, Shaza asked,
"You were sleeping with him, weren't you?"
Instinctively she knew it was the last chance she would ever have to inflict pain upon him, and she turned in the seat to watch his face as she replied,
"Yes, I love him. And we are lovers."
She saw him wince, but she wanted to hurt him more, and she went on, "Apart from my father's death, there is nothing I regret, nothing I have done of which I am ashamed. On the contrary, I am proud to have known and loved a man like Moses Garmer, proud of what I have done for him and for my country.
Think of him kicking and choking on the rope, and be proud of that also," Shaza said, and landed.
He taxied the Mosquito to the terminal buildings, and they climbed down onto the tarmac and faced each other. There was a bruise on her face where he had struck her, and the icy Highveld wind pulled at their clothing and ruffled their hair. He handed her the little bundle of banknotes and her passport.
"Your seat on the London flight is reserved. There is enough here to pay for it and to take you where you want to go."
His voice broke as his rage and his sorrow took control of him again.
"To hell or to the gallows, if my wish for you comes true. I hope never to see or hear of you again."
He turned away from her, but she called after him.
"We were always enemies, Shaza Courtney, even in the best times, and we will be enemies to the very end. Despite your wish, you will hear of me again. I promise you that much."
He climbed into the Mosquito, and it was minutes before he had himself sufficiently in hand to start the engines. When he looked out through the windshield again, she was gone.